This is Callie Jansen, WIQH's news director. As we continue to have discussions about racial injustice in the world, many can't help but wonder what role the education system, particularly the English curriculum, plays in this all. Are the stories of Black, Indigenous, and people of color characters and authors adequately represented in the curriculum? How do we approach literature that focuses on race or racism? Do students of color feel comfortable and safe during class discussions on these topics? Stay tuned to WIQH for this week's episode of Cue the Culture. Here is the Intersections Club, joined by Ms. Moskowitz and Ms. Weiss-Heisey of the English Department here at CCHS, explore and further examine questions like these.
Hello, everyone. We are the Intersections Club, again here for our third episode of Cue the Culture. And today we're here with two English teachers, Ms. Weiss-Heisey and Ms. Moskowitz. And we really want to focus on the English curriculum because we think that just working within our own school and making improvements or talking about things that we can do literally in the classroom would be a really great step moving forward. And so yesterday, the Intersections Club actually held a discussion with students, and a few members here were also there in the discussion, where we tried to gauge student opinions about the English curriculum and any kind of betterment that we think can be strived for. And we just wanted to disclaim, we're not trying to bash the curriculum in any way, shape, or form. It is definitely has many great points, and we can see like the themes through every single year. But of course, as everything, there can always be improvement that can be made. And I think that's just why we're here to have this conversation and try to find ways that we can make these improvements and talk about times when maybe students were uncomfortable or maybe they think they want to make some kind of recommendation for the future. So also to Ms. Moskowitz and Ms. Weiss, you can feel free to just talk about your own opinions. And I think that's really what we want to say. And start off, we wanted to just hear about how books are chosen and like structured for the curriculum. If there's like nationwide, is there certain requirements for like books and how that works?
You want me to start, or you want to?
Yeah, go ahead, because you are. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So very generally speaking, the English curriculum, yes, there are state standards primarily that we have to follow. And those state standards are primarily, and Ms. Weiss-Heisey, help me out here a little bit because I know you're very familiar with them. They really are about skills about the kinds of skills that students should acquire over the course of 4 years of high school, for example. And reading is one of the primary skills. So, students should be exposed to increasingly complex literature. They should be exposed to different genres. They should be exposed to literature from different time periods. So as we build our curriculum, we definitely have to keep all that in mind. And I would say beyond that, as a department, we do care about trying to ensure that there are diverse voices in the curriculum. And I think that we have tried to bring in diverse voices within each year's curriculum. And hope, and I know that it's not perfect, but hope that over the course of 4 years, at least, students will have encountered, writers from different racial backgrounds, ethnicities, different genders, different time periods. And so we kind of wrestle with that a lot, like how to make sure that within each course, there's a variety of voices while making sure that the books we choose connect to what we think is the primary theme and what we think is age appropriate for that particular grade level. We want the books to be books that, students, a wide range of students will find engaging and meaningful in different ways. So those are some of the things that we wrestle with as we're choosing books for each particular course. And I'm going to let Ms. Weiss-Heisey kind of jump in too, because I'm sure she has some other thoughts as well.
Well, I think when you're when Ms. Moskowitz is referring to state standards, I don't know if you guys know how many there are and how deep they get. I mean, just, you know, we have to read, we have to do research, we have to read nonfiction, we have to read fiction, we have to do poetry, we have to do multimedia, we have to do, you know, interpret it with different techniques, figurative language, like all those techniques you learned in the poetry units freshman year. I mean, there's just a great number of those things. And then we also have to look at, between CP and honors, the reading level of our students, and, you know, all the way from concrete readers to abstract readers sitting in the same class. So all of these things fold into how and why we choose the texts we choose. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And we wanted to ask, after you guys explained that, if you were to take out some of the classic books that, you know, English teachers usually teach, what do you think the consequences of that would be in the curriculum and in your classroom?
We actually have already. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, the curriculum has gone through a great deal of evolution, certainly in the time I've been there. And in the past 10 years, I would say the English curriculum has kind of shifted, and our courses have shifted a great deal. And some classic texts, like, I don't think anybody teaches Charles Dickens anymore, for example. You know, there's, we used to have a British literature course that, you know, really focused on those traditional texts like the Canterbury Tales and Beowulf, and, you know, some of those real, like, the books that a lot of us probably read as English majors in college. And so there are actually a lot of texts that have, we've let go of, in order to bring other voices in, and in order to maybe break down some of those categories, like, you know, instead of kind of framing the curriculum around Brit Lit, American Lit, European Lit, you know, we've tried to sort of break down some of those categories so that we now have ninth grade literature, 10th grade literature, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, and we can kind of try to bring in new voices. I think, to speak to what you're asking, Joseph, I do think that we try to hold on to some traditional texts, and we keep asking ourselves which ones still have relevance, still have meaning, which ones can work well with, can pair well with more books. And it's sort of an ongoing discussion. It's possible that we're at a moment now when some of the books that we've been preserving in the curriculum might be time to reevaluate them. So,
we talk about this all the time as a department. I mean, this is a common theme for our lunch discussions or our department meeting discussions, where we, you know, we really do, and we bring up books and we talk about them over the summer. We send each other emails if we've read a book that could be added or at least could be offered for an outside reading. We're really pretty critical of what we're giving you guys in class. So maybe it would help if you said, you know, the title of a book that you think is one of those classical texts that we've been holding on to.
Well, I know that in the past, when talking about this with other students, a lot of students have felt like Catcher in the Rye wasn't a great book for them to read. They didn't really relate to it, and they kind of felt like the themes of it weren't as deep, or as they couldn't really connect to it as they did with other books. So what are your thoughts on removing that from the curriculum?
That's a big one. That one comes up a lot. I know Vicky was in my class. She's smiling. I hang on to it for a number of reasons. It's a coming of age. It's a hero's journey. It's sort of a common text that the people who are older than you have read. I mean, if you would read it outside of school, I would feel comfortable with that. I think that's one of the, it was the first teenage narrator that connected with people. So Salinger was sort of a huge deal. I know that sounds weird, but I also think there's depth in the text, where if you read it if I read it, I think I was in eighth grade or before eighth grade in the summer. I read it and I read it as an adventure. And then the next time I read it in high school and the next time in college and then over and over again. And every time I read it, I see just the art of Salinger. It's really technically a perfect book. So I know I hang on to some things. I teach Song of Solomon or A Raisin in the Sun. Because they're so well written and we can hit some of those other standards too, as we're reading. I mean, we've talked, I've considered letting go of Catcher and talking to the department about adding The Roundhouse by Louise Erdrich, which is another coming of age story. She's a Native American author. I really like the book. But it's actually a book that you guys could read on your own and enjoy it and see a view. And I really do like that book. So I've considered dropping Catcher.
I think that's something that a lot of, like, a big part of our discussion yesterday was that, like, we read these, a lot of books, like you said, they're kind of monumental in, like, through, like, generational, but they were, like, kids were talking about, like, oh, but like who's defining the classics? And and then also I was also thinking, like, is it similar to taking down historical monuments during this time by taking out these books that are like monumental in curriculum and something that many people have read?
I don't think it's exactly the same, because I think there are different reasons why we're taking down monuments. But as far as including your history in our history kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? So current books, books that you relate to. I don't know. I mean, literature is longitudinal as well, historical as well. And like with Gatsby, I mean, we could talk about dropping Gatsby, but authors talk to authors. Do you know what I mean? Like, Salinger definitely knew The Great Gatsby. Stephen King, in writing Shawshank Redemption, he looked at The Great Gatsby. So it's also a study of literature, too.
There's a couple things I'm thinking as you're talking about that. I mean, one is when we think about literature, you know, why do we read any book? And why do we study a book? And sometimes we like to say that books are both mirrors and windows, right? They can be a mirror, it can be a window. It can be a mirror in that you see something of yourself, you see something of your own experience portrayed for you, and maybe that validates you, or maybe it expresses something that you felt but didn't know how to articulate. And it helps you see yourself and see your own experience more fully. And if it's a window, you know, it's helping you look beyond your own experience and put yourself in someone else's shoes and sort of understand something about the world that you might not have understand and maybe cultivate or develop some kind of empathy, you know, and understanding by looking at someone else's experience or going into a world or an experience that's, whether it's a historical context or a cultural context, that's so different from your own. So we think about that a lot, I think, with books, and try to sort of think about what those books will do. And no one book is going to be able to do that for every reader. So I think that part of what we think about is, you know, we're never going to have a curriculum where every student loves every book that we read or finds meaning in every book we read. I have some students who love The Catcher in the Rye. So I think it speaks to different people at different times in their own life. I agree with Ms. Weiss-Heisey that it's a book that has a certain historical context. It's a book that is speaking to other, you know, books from that, you know, from the past, and maybe more contemporary writers are kind of looking to Salinger and looking to the, or paying homage to Salinger and The Catcher in the Rye. So I think reading it can give you some perspective on literary history. And maybe it's a book that needs to be paired with a more contemporary so that, you know, you can kind of see how the coming of age experience, you know, what's universal about it and what has, you know, since the 1940s, right? I am not, it's not, it's a book that I think is definitely one that I could go either way on, right? And it's not one that I'm going to like defend to the death, but it's also one where I, it's not a book I studied in school. It's a book that I read on my own and that I only studied when it was part of a curriculum and I was found that I was teaching it. And I think, you know, I hear you. I think that there, for some students, it feels really dated and it doesn't speak to them at all. And they don't identify with Holden. And I think for some students, it does speak to them in some way, or they feel some empathy for him. I think we read it differently now than people read it in the 1960s and 1970s, for example. I think when I was a teenager and we read The Catcher in the Rye, it was a book about rebellion and nonconformity and, you know, resisting authority. And I think now when we read it, people see it as a book about grief and loss. And so it's sort of interesting there to see how a book can land differently with readers at different time periods. So, yeah, but it's definitely, you know, maybe it's time to think about whether it's, you know, should still be required reading or should it be on an optional reading list or should it be paired with something else? There's lots of different ways to think about that. Yeah.
I wanted to add to Ms. Moskowitz's mm-hmm. windows and mirrors, because sometimes when you're looking through a mirror, window, it becomes a sliding glass door that you go mm-hmm. through, because as you're looking through the window, you see some commonalities with yourself or some themes you're familiar with, and you go through the sliding glass door and you become part of that imaginary scene, imaginary journey. And then when you come back out of it, that book might be a mirror where you see yourself in it. So, you know, literature transforms us. And we definitely want you to be able to understand it, connect with it, see yourself in it, see similarities, or at least understand a part of the world that you may never see.
Oh, I think that, like, it does make sense. And just speaking on, like, sophomore year and being in Ms. Weiss's class, I personally really enjoyed how you gave backstory. Like, we read about Salinger and, like, what made him write it, or, like, the author behind the piece, because it gave me a lot more perspective onto, like, what the book is about than just, like, purely reading it and, like, looking at themes and everything like that. Because I think it's interesting to see what goes into it and, like, his background, and it made me understand, like, oh, he's coming from this perspective of, I think, also being, like, a private school kid. And it just made a lot more sense to me. And I think yesterday we were talking about how, oh, maybe this should be more common in class, is just, like, having this kind of backstory to a lot of the pieces that we read, because I just think it gives more perspective and context for when we do end up going into them. And I also think another book that we read, we, like, just watched an interview of a teacher and of the author, and that was also really helpful as well.
Is that Toni Morrison?
Yeah, Toni Morrison. I really like that. I think that, like, even just a 10-minute interview mm-hmm. Just really changes a lot, like, how you read it and how you perceive it overall.
Well, I have to say, I sort of slipped in nonfiction reading with that, and media, different media, which again goes to the state standards. So all of these things sort of, you know, are braided together. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I think that's a really good, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to bring up another book to piggyback off of what Joseph said earlier about Catcher in the Rye, which I personally really enjoyed. But one book that we did read in class that was kind of hard for me to go through was, like, To Kill a Mockingbird, because I understand it's one of the books that's always been pushed as a classic book, and it's, like, really well written, and it was, like, talked about race in a different way for its time period, but for me, like, living in America now as a Black person, it was hard for me to read because it felt like the same narrative continually about people of color going through some sort of struggle or coming, like, or ending in the end always being the victim or always being oppressed in one way or another, and they don't seem to get a happy ending. And that's how I felt with reading To Kill a Mockingbird, that it was a book about a Black character, but the Black character didn't get a positive ending in one at all. And I just wanted to ask your opinion on that, because it's not as if the book is the only book we read about people of color, but it's one of the books where I'm just like, oh, it's the narrative once again that people of color don't get to thrive.
Okay, so I, as a CP freshman teacher, I do teach To Kill a Mockingbird, but I go at it a totally different angle, because my CP kids, we don't read the whole thing. We read up to the first 9 chapters, and then we watch the film, and I look at it through the lens of Southern Gothic, where you're looking at a number of, in Southern Gothic, you have freaks, you have monsters, you have heroes, you have the white knight, you have the innocent. So, because if you look at that novel, there are a lot of people who suffer. Yes, Tom Robinson dies, and Mayaliu suffers. Boo Radley suffers. Atticus suffers. It's really a novel about suffering and coming out of it, or perspective. I see it more as a novel of perspective. But I get it. I mean, that's been another book that the freshman teachers have talked about dropping, especially with the entrance of The Hate U Give. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's one of the ones we discuss. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just want to echo that. I mean, I haven't taught freshmen in a long time, and I did used to teach the freshmen, and I only read To Kill a Mockingbird and have taught it. And, you know, for many years, it was a beloved book, you know, and Atticus was, you know, people admired Atticus and saw him as a heroic figure. But I think our perspective now, I think we are in a place, if we are going to confront, you know, our nation's deep, deep history of racial inequality and white supremacy, we have to look at how that book, even though it's trying to show the injustice in what happens in that Southern society and happens to Tom Robinson, it does it from the perspective of a white family. And Atticus is, you know, a white savior, right, who tries to do the right thing, but actually, you know, in the end, he fails, right? So I think it's of its time. I mean, it was published in what, 1960, 1962, something like that, 63. So it's, you know, it's of its time when people were, you know, beginning to, understand, the toxicity of, you know, racial segregation in the South, but, you know, had not evolved to where we are hopefully today in understanding how it wasn't just about segregation, that racial inequity, you know, permeates all aspects of our society, and we need to try and unpack it and address it. So I get it. I hear, I'm so glad, Dallas, that you feel that you can talk about that, because I think we need to wrestle with that. And I think we need to reevaluate whether that's the book we want to use. Maybe there's so many other books that have been written now. Maybe we can find something that would address those themes in a way that is more culturally sensitive at this point in time. So I hear you on that. And I agree with Ms. Vice-Heisey. I think teachers in the department, you know, are wrestling with that as well.
Yeah. And I think if we did hang on to it, that the kind of discussion we're having now is an essential discussion to have at the end of the book. And like with Of Mice and Men, my kids write another chapter. I would like to hear Calpurnia's story. I would like to turn it on the class and say, give me Calpurnia's story. Give me Mayella's story. Give me Miss Maudie's story. Because a lot of people are disadvantaged there. So if it was kept, I'd rather, you know, sort of switch the lens and use it to have this kind of discussion. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. I just want to jump in with this book as well, To Kill a Mockingbird, because it does use the N-word, and it is important for like the historical context. But when reading it out loud in class, I was just wondering like what the standard is, because I know some teachers do allow students, specifically white students, to say the N-word because it is in the book. But I personally do feel uncomfortable with that. I just was wondering, like, what is the standard for that?
Well, we won't be reading the N-word in class anymore. Most of us don't. And I know my students will say N-word or but because it's there. It's in the text. It's in a lot of our texts. But yeah, we won't be, you shouldn't be hearing that word anymore out loud in class.
I think you're right, Stephanie, that for a number of years, there was no clear standard about that. I think it was the teacher's comfort level or how, you know, and the student's comfort level. But I think, you know, I know as of now, there's a clear expectation. No, we're not going to say that word out loud in class, even if it's in the text. I have a related question for you guys. I don't know if any of you have read books by Black writers like Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. Did some of you read, some of you might have read that, you know, this past year, or even Fences, the play Fences, which some of you might have read sophomore year. So those are books where the writers, you know, African-American authors have created dialogue that uses colloquialisms that are part of the community that they're writing about. You know, Zora Neale Hurston's writing about a Black community in the South in Florida, and she wants her characters to talk the way the people in that community would really talk. And as a white teacher, I've always had discomfort with having students read, you know, that passages from those books out loud, feeling that somehow having, you know, white students reading that dialogue makes me a little uncomfortable, almost like it could be perceived as mocking, or I don't know. Did any of you have you had an experience like that, or have know what I'm talking about?
I personally have not read the book. I know, I think Stephanie actually had me read a passage of it, and I saw it and I was like, oh, that's easy to read. I read it out loud. but for me, I don't think that the problem is like, oh, it's mocking. I think that like when you're reading it, but I think that the students take it and like make fun of it, or they sound, oh, this sounds hilarious, something like that. So that they will read it and they will laugh. I think, oh, this is funny. They talk so weirdly. And, you know, that kind of conversation leads into like the culture at CC and how we normalize, you know, making fun of like different cultures a lot. But for me, I personally don't have a problem with students or teachers reading the text and reading, you know, if it sounds like Southern and has an accent or anything like that. I think that the problem comes when like students take that as a joke and then they start using that to mock the culture and make fun of the people who talk like that. And I think that's where the issue comes from.
To go Thank off you. Of what Joseph said as well, like, I'm personally, like, okay with teachers, like, teaching or presenting the material that way because it's authentic and it's real and it brings a different perspective to the book. But I just one recommendation or a suggestion is, like, also teaching about how the language that is used is native to the area and is native to the people around there. Because when it comes to books where the characters are talking with a specific accent or have a specific like word choice or language, I feel like we've never addressed how that language affects them or how that language is connected to them in one way or another. And I feel like if we have a lesson in being like, oh, this is a part of like African-American vernacular English, and that's important to them, and that's important to the area, it brings a different perspective to the book.
Thank you. I think that's really important too. I agree with you, Dallas, and yeah, I'm glad you said that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think to connect to that, Vicky wanted to mention something about American-born Chinese. We know that book does inhibit some like caricatures, but that's a part of the plot and what you're learning from that book. But I think one thing that we mentioned is that had we been exposed to more culturally diverse authors
previously than when that book was then introduced, when it was, we'd be able to dive into why is this being portrayed this way? Why does he turn into a white man at the end? Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it is definitely the culture of the classroom that is definitely not the teacher's fault in any way, that it's hard to have these conversations mm-hmm. about and dive into what is happening in these books, because the students maybe have not been exposed to this. And it's difficult to have a conversation when people are laughing at a character in the book when it's supposed to be taken seriously and supposed to reflect what is happening in our kind of area today.
Yeah. And go ahead, Vicky. Okay. I think, yeah, when we were thinking of having this conversation, I immediately thought of that graphic novel because, well, it says American born Chinese in freshman year. When we got the graphic novel, I was so excited. So I was like, I'm literally American born Chinese. Like, this is my identity. And when you started reading it, and of course it has like caricatures, which is really the purpose of the graphic novel. And like, we watched a mini interview with the author, and it, like, he was saying how he wants to make it blatant that there are these stereotypes and whatnot. And like, of course, the characters are like chinky, and then he like has a certain look to him. And in the end, he turns into a white boy. And I don't know. I felt like the novel did fulfill like that impact of, you know, being so obvious, and everyone's like, oh, this is ridiculous. Like, why would you say that? Or what? That's so funny. Like, his name is this. And I think it was really the students' response that makes me feel more comfortable than like teaching in high school. And the more I think about it is how when we enter high school, it seems like we're really jam-packing, like, having all these different perspectives and allowing students to explore it. But I think the real issue comes is that we're coming into high school like not really prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, as high school teachers, you probably won't be able to like go into middle school or elementary school and like make that kind of change. But I just thought, like, this is the first time I'd ever read about like a Chinese American story, and it's like the first introduction of that kind of story to my classmates. And I think that I just didn't want whatever that graphic novel portrayed as like their first image of basically like my identity. And it would want to implement different kinds of stories earlier on rather than like straight to high school, where most of your ideas have already formed.
It's Ms. Greeley and I talked about American born Chinese yesterday. And she said, oh, I must have done a bad job teaching it to my students. I'm like, Jen, you never do a bad job teaching anything to your students. And I said, maybe they were too young in freshman year. And she said, well, some of the kids think it's you know, it's like a juvenile book, but it's not. And so sort of to speak to your concern is it has these very harsh images and stereotypes. And I, quite frankly, don't know if as freshmen you're ready to enter into that and feel comfortable with it. So if it were pushed later, you might be more comfortable with it or able to have heard other stories so that you totally understand what we're doing. But I'm glad you said you weren't ready for it, because we don't control what happens in the middle school or in the elementary schools or at your homes when you're little. And this kind of reading has to start young, young, young. And open up these stories, you know, different cultural stories, different stories, people of color, different religions, different, you know, places where they live. These have to start really young. And I know from taking some classes, reading classes and literature classes that included elementary and preschool teachers, I think they're trying to do this now. So I'm hoping that they're trying to do this now. So that by the time you guys hit us freshman year, you're used to sort of this big choice, this palette of lives and people and cultures, and you'll get what we're doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that it really, like, I agree, because I felt kind of disappointed saying that, like, I don't think me or my classmates are really ready for this kind of blatant stereo these blatant stereotypes. And I think that's like the issues that we should be ready. We should be prepared and like mature enough to read it and like understand the purpose and what the author is trying to do, because there's like a reason behind it. And yeah.
And I also wonder if with American-born Chinese, with you, Vicky, sitting in class, if you're looking around, if you're not surrounded by people like you, it's like it's personal to you and no one else around you is feeling that. And that also will make you feel like an outsider and uncomfortable. Does that happen?
I think the time where I felt like most just uncomfortable was when, you know, my classmates were like holding the book and maybe other people were like flipping through, since it is pictures and, you know, it's not only is it like the writing, but it's also visual. And just from someone looking through and flipping through like their classmates' book, they'd be like, oh, this is so funny. Like, look at this. And those kinds of comments, I think, are worse, because in the classroom, I think there's always some level of filter and kids are like, we're here to learn. And, you know, the teacher has some purpose with this lesson plan. But I really think it's just like when it's out of the classroom as well, which obviously is really hard to control if you're like a teacher in the class. But I think it is the side comments that people make, and especially because it's visual, that it's so easy to criticize and like make fun of.
Mm-hmm. I just want to jump in and say that what you're saying, Vicky, kind of connects to what I think Joseph was saying about when students read a passage that's in, you know, in dialect or Black vernacular, and they read it out of context and they laugh at it and think it sounds funny. It sounds like you're kind of had the same experience of students looking at a picture from that graphic, a picture with a very exaggerated, perhaps caricature, right, of an Asian person, right, or someone of Asian descent, and they're laughing at it. So there's that sense of, I think as teachers, we don't always realize how the books are being, how students are reacting to them outside the classroom, right? Or how things can be taken out of context and comments can be made that can be hurtful. And we're not there sometimes, or we don't realize what's happening, and we may miss opportunities to help students navigate that, those difficult and those hot button issues, right? And that's, I see a connection there, and I see it as something maybe we do need to think about and kind of prepare for better as we're trying to bring these diverse voices into the curriculum. It's not just about bringing in a new book. You got to think about how you're going to provide enough background and context for students to be able to understand the text and appreciate it and understand how it fits into a bigger picture.
I might just add on a little bit there, because,
yeah,
you know, also reading American-born Chinese, I'm half Chinese myself, and almost like the whole time we were reading it, I kept thinking like, are these stereotypes like the things that people think about me? And, you know, I kind of find myself looking around the classroom, like trying to see like, is this what people are, you know, looking at me, like thinking that I'm these stereotypes. And I mean, maybe it's because I had an experience like that in elementary school where I brought in a type of food that was like really, really foreign and different. And I kind of got a bunch of questioning looks about it. And it was kind of similar to what happened in the book, but I was just, I kept feeling like I was sort of isolated there. And luckily I was taking the class with Vicky. And so, you know, at least we were able to like look at each other and be like, oh, you know, this is kind of weird. But I feel like it's the way that it affects students that are of that race or, you know, of that culture. And it's sort of like, are these people being portrayed correctly? Because I think that even if it is a good book, and even if, you know, the people, you know, there's, you know, specific people, it's, you know, very clear that it's not the average person, I think that the kids still get the idea that, you know, main characters or, you know, characters that are of color, that's like the average, and they're finding that stereotype. I don't know, maybe I'm not being clear enough here, but like, I think the kids are, you know, taking it the wrong way. And so, you know, just at least like with American-born Chinese, I was worried that because it was one of those first instances of, you know, experiencing that kind of culture. Like, kids were taking it as, oh, this is what all Chinese people are like. And so I think that goes back to the whole point of, you know, is it too early? And, you know, we need to learn about these things earlier on. And, you know, just to say, it was like one of the only books in the English curriculum that I took issue with, because everything else I've really enjoyed reading and I've found to be, you know, pretty insightful and helpful to me. It was just American-born Chinese, I felt like it was too early. And I think that either having it later on, because I think if I read it right now, I think if other people read it right now, we'd be ready for it. But I think it's really that time, like when the books are read. And I don't know if that's something that you guys can control, you know, maybe trying to move books like these that are harsher and, you know, more stereotypical to later in the high school experience. But I feel like if that's a possibility, that might be something that's helpful to students who are feeling isolated during reading these books.
Yeah, and the last point I think I'll make on like American-born Chinese is that like listening to how the curriculum was formed, I can see how this like fulfills the graphic novel unit, because we did a lot of graphic novel stuff, and like obviously we really didn't stay on the topic of like the actual book or the graphic novel specifically for that long, because obviously it was like the unit. And I think overall Miss Freely really did teach it all. If she's listening, I really enjoyed her class. I just wanted to put that out there. But also for me, I think the very blatant stereotypes, I don't know, I feel like racism towards Asians in general can be very subtle, and since it's very normalized in our society, I don't know if maybe having something where it is more subtle and like more nuanced and how it really is. But I do know that the author was trying to make it so obvious, but like reality is it isn't. It's hard to detect sometimes. And I think that would like bring a lot more deeper meaning and more meaningful conversation to speaking on like Asian American experience and having like that kind of conversation instead of being like, oh, you know, the character's drawn this way, or like he says words in this kind of way. And yeah, I just, that was just my last thoughts on American-born Chinese. Mm.
Good. Thank you. Yes. I mean, I've never taught it, but I, you know, everything you're saying makes sense and is certainly worth thinking about. And thinking about, you know, JJ, your comment about, we do sometimes move books around. So I think that that's a, like one really constructive suggestion. Maybe it belongs elsewhere in the curriculum, or maybe there needs to be more a unit that prepares students better for the stereotypes they're going to encounter in that book. So I hear you. Those are really thoughtful observations. And the other thing it makes me think about is that sometimes, you know, we introduce a book with great intentions, thinking, oh, we're going to bring this new voice into the curriculum. We're going to bring this new genre, graphic novel, into the curriculum. And sometimes the impact is not what we, you know, the impact on particularly specific students may not be what we expected or what we anticipated. And so it's important for us to hear that.
Yeah, I guess like one question I had after our discussion, especially yesterday, was like, is this school really doing enough to include like BIPOC perspectives? Because I know like we were talking about with a lot of the students yesterday, they were saying how like even if we are teaching, you know, a book with a person of color as the main character, a lot of teachers might look to the people of color in the room to like get started on discussions, you know, and it kind of gives the white students like another pass to just like kind of like aside that and kind of force like the students of color to like control the discussion, and like they're like kind of the only ones that care about it, I guess. And you know, like from my perspective, like I've never read a book with a South Asian character as the main perspective, which is like definitely fine. There are so many books that are like I could relate to a little bit, but it is a question that we can think about if we can include more perspectives.
I agree with you. I think you're right. I think we need to do more, and I think we want to. And Ms. Vaisaisi, do you want to jump in? And
this is also part of our conversation. And a few times, because I will go to shorter pieces, or I'll go to media clips to fill in information before we do a novel. And I've suggested, well, can we include more essays or more short stories or poetry from a variety? But it's come back to me that when we're meeting is that, well, then we're relegating those voices to a smaller piece, and therefore we're diminishing their importance. Which the way I look at it is, we have to do all these different genres. So, and I want different voices, and I hope that my students would understand that I'm not trying to, just because we read this essay by Amy Tan and this novel by Toni Morrison, it doesn't mean that Amy Tan is, less worthy than Toni Morrison. I want to sort of give you all these appetizers so you can see, because we can't hit, can't hit every culture, and we miss many cultures in what we read. So I do think that in trying to, weave in powerful essays and powerful poems, powerful songs from other voices, I think we do have to do that. And I hope our students would understand it's like that we're not saying this person is important because we're only reading a short piece.
Yeah, but I definitely think that this is something that we can work on, is on, how do we create more opportunities and bring more voices in? I mean, we're somewhat constrained by the curriculum that already exists. We do frequently review on a regular basis and try to update the curriculum, but it's somewhat slow and incremental process. We're also constrained by budgets, right? We can't buy, a whole collection of new books. We can get one book here and one book there, depending on the curriculum and the budgets. But I think what Ms. Basai sees, I think a lot of us do try to bring in voices through videos and short stories and essays and poems as well. But it's something that we need to keep working on for sure. Yeah.
And I have to say, in our discussions, sometimes it's not in a department meeting, sometimes it's just when we're sitting at our desks. like some people have dropped Song of Solomon to do Poem Going or another novel. And it's like, because Song of Solomon, when was it published? 71? In the 70s. It's pretty old.
77, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, 77. And it's like, I would, just for Toni Morrison, I couldn't drop it. So when we look at books too, it's like, oh, that's an old book. We need to shelve that and find something new. It's like, so we have these discussions about the age of a book. Not just the author's voice or the themes or the culture that it shows. So I would hate to think that we start to drop books just because they're older books, but they're still powerful books and historically significant books.
And the writers are significant. Oh my gosh. Going back to, I think, Joseph's question earlier about what the consequences would be about letting go of certain traditional texts. I mean, at this point, Toni Morrison is a giant. I mean, she's right up there as one of the most important writers ever, alongside someone like Shakespeare, So I wouldn't want to drop her, but yeah, but I want to make room for new voices as well.
Right? Yeah.
Just to cycle back to Kill a Mockingbird with just a question to pose to you two. This isn't just like isolated to CC, but it's isolated, I guess, to the world of literature at large. I feel like when people talk about To Kill a Mockingbird, they use it as like a focal point in the discussion on like race and racism in America. But my issue with that is it's told from the perspective of a white family. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard for me to take it as a book that is heralded as being so nuanced when I talk about race, and it's so important when we discuss race, but it's from the perspective of a white family, and the character of color is so one-dimensional. And I just wanted to know your opinions on how that book is discussed.
Well, I approach it differently. I approach it through the lens of Southern Gothic. I said that before, and people's perspectives. I think you're right. I think that's a book, as time has gone and things have happened in the world and in the United States, that we are looking at critically, and especially because her draft of, what's it, Go Tell a Watchman?
Go Tell a Watchman, yeah.
I wouldn't buy it. But that shows Atticus is a racist. So, I mean, that, again, I think with that, people started to look at To Kill a Mockingbird, like, what is this? But I think you're right. It does tell it through Scout's eyes.
I think you have to acknowledge, if you're going to keep teaching it, you have to come right out and be really, and acknowledge that and acknowledge the limitations of that point of view, especially now, right? Now when we have Black Lives Matter and we are recognizing that, you know, that we're all, you know, those of us that are white, have white privilege that we have not acknowledged, and we have to work on that. I think you have to come at To Kill a Mockingbird differently than, you know, people might have read it when it first came out in the 60s or even in the 70s when, you know, it was sort of seen as, I think it was seen as a book that showed that white people could be allies, could care about Black people and could see the injustice in their community and have their eyes opened. But, right, they have their, like, Scout has her eyes open, Jem has his eyes opened to the injustice, but then nothing really changes by the end of the book. And I think that's, that you wouldn't want to just leave it there, I don't think that's adequate anymore.
And also, like, in our discussion yesterday, someone brought up specifically on To Kill a Mockingbird, was that she actually enjoyed it because it was one of the very few books about, like, a young girl's coming of age story. Mm-hmm. And that really got me to think about, like, how many stories we read about, like, going through the lens of a female character. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting because now we're talking about, like, gender as well. Mm-hmm. And how many books, like, I really thought about it, like, how many have I read about young girls coming of age stories? Mm-hmm. And maybe thoughts on different gender books through different lenses of, like, gender as well.
Mm-hmm. Also, to kind of add on to that question, not to give you too much to think about, but just in general about, like, having books that have characters that are minorities, like, whether about their race or their gender or their sexual orientation, just, like, what do you think the curriculum could try to do so that we can get books like that in and increase the size? Because I feel like, you know, a lot of the people at CC who are in those minorities and are those minorities kind of feel left out in reading, you know, books about, constantly reading books where we have the main character is, you know, white and straight, you know, or male, and, you know, there's not really a lot of books that they can, again, relate to.
I think you're giving us our marching orders. And again, I can't speak for the department, but I want to let you know that I think the department as a whole is sympathetic to this perspective. And I think that we are in hopefully a transformative moment in our culture where forces are coming together to kind of push us out of our complacency and inertia and move towards meaningful change. I think that there are, I think there's some initiatives within the department, and I can't give you specifics yet, but I know there's some initiatives underway to try and address issues of in the curriculum and to try to make the curriculum more actively anti-racist. So maybe there'll be some things happening in the coming year, hopefully if we're able to kind of move forward and not, you know, have to just keep dealing with coronavirus, but if we can actually move forward around educational issues and connect what's happening in our school with meaningful change that we want to see in society. So Joseph, I hear you. I think people care about this issue. I think there's momentum building. And I think you as a group you have momentum and you are bringing, you're bringing us all along with you. So we're just two teachers here talking to you now, and I hope that this is, that we can continue the conversation. I hope that you'll be able, maybe we can come back and have another roundtable discussion with more of the department, and maybe once the year gets underway and we see how some of those initiatives are starting to take shape, we'll be able to talk about that more specifically. I think that's where we're going. Yeah, go ahead.
And I just wanted to add that this isn't something that's coming out of this year. we did, I made a curriculum writing proposal last spring. And six of us read a number of books, and then we met on a day in the library, and we discussed the books and the merits and the levels. Mm-hmm. And we did add a book. I didn't get to read it with my freshmen this year because of the coronavirus, but we, just to put you through some of the thinking that we had, Dr. Nirenberg suggested Americanized Rebel Without a Green Card. And I thought, okay, I'll read this book. Have any of you read it? No. Okay. It's written by a young Iranian American woman. It is a coming of age story. So Vicky, it was a female voice coming of age story. It was a different culture that I don't believe we have much. It was an easy read. They were here. She and her family were here illegally by accident. So it was an immigrant story of being here illegally by accident. It's not like they jumped over a wall or swam through a river or hid or anything like that. They came here on a visa. The visa's expired. There was a paperwork problem. So it gave, in a number of ways, it gave a different story than what was already in our curriculum. And it was a memoir. So it ticked off nonfiction, female voice, coming of age, different culture, different view of immigration. So, you know, we went through all that. So it's, you know, it's a number of things we look at. And we didn't choose some of the other books because scenes with sex or really harsh language, or some of them were maybe promoting a religion too much, or we worried about what parents would say, what kids would say. So a number of things we have to navigate, really difficult waters, because either developmentally, maturationally, and we have to worry about, you know, the town and parents, what are they going to say about what we're teaching their children? So, but we did that process last summer. So this is something our department really concentrate on and want to get right for you guys.
Yeah, I think as students, like, that's really good to hear, that like it is like an ongoing process. And I think one of the things that, you know, I've been thinking, and like from our discussions, it really does come from like seeing new perspectives and kind of understanding where other people are coming from to kind of like reduce our own biases and our own prejudices, because it definitely has to start at an earlier age, because we can't expect like as like freshmen that you kind of introduce everything all at once. Mm. So I think like change throughout the district will definitely help kind of promote our own cultural competency. So that's good to hear.
Yeah. Thank you, Akshaya, for the amazing final word. We're actually going to wrap it up. We want to thank our English teachers for coming in today and joining us for this conversation. You guys were very insightful, and we're very happy to share this discussion with you guys. We also wanted to say to follow us on Instagram at CCHS Intersections and stay tuned for future episodes. So thank you.